When I was a kid, my uncle was a high school biology teacher. And in fact, by the time I got to high school, he was my high school biology teacher. But before that, he was just my uncle. And he would take me to school every day because he had to go to school as well. It was, you know, it was convenient. And one morning, we are driving down the country road, get to the highway to make our way to school one morning. He stops on the side of this unpaved road we're going down next to a barbed wire fence. And he says, "Hey, Andrew, jump out of the van. Go over there and take this cup and get some pond scum out of that pond over there." And I look over, and sure enough, there's a cattle tank. And so I followed instructions. I got out of the van, and maybe there was some light trespassing involved, but nobody got in trouble and nobody was harmed. And I managed to get this sample of pond water with algae and all sorts of gunk in it for my uncle to take to his class to throw under a microscope to show off nematodes or whatever. And I didn't put all the pieces together right then, but I think it helped me build an understanding of why we learn science, and today why we learn science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Because quite frankly, those subjects determine the world around us. But sometimes making that connection between the world around us and the concepts we have to learn can be difficult. When it comes to science in particular, though, there's a strong tradition of science communicators. I'd like to include my uncle in that group. He was very famous for telling his students over and over again that life is a trip, and he's not wrong. And perhaps you can remember your own favorites, from Carl Sagan to Bill Nye the Science Guy, or that guy that was on Beakman's World, I guess his name was Beakman. Or maybe today's Mr. Know-It-All himself, Neil deGrasse Tyson. But whoever it is, science has always benefited from having people who are willing to make a connection with students and with the public, to draw them into these important concepts. As an educator, your whole job is about drawing students into these concepts that you know are important, that you care about. But you may have noticed from that list of science communicators I just gave you, well, they're all men. And traditionally, the STEM fields have been male-dominated. But we also know that for decades, for centuries, for millennia, women have been involved in building and sharing our scientific understanding. Just think of Marie Curie or Rosalind Franklin, who helped discover DNA and the double helix, or Ada Lovelace, who helped build some of the world's earliest computers, or Rachel Carson, who helped the world understand the environmental impacts that were beginning to show themselves in the 20th century. And the fact is, the more people that care about something, the more people that can contribute to it, and the more ideas we get, the more good ideas we can isolate and replicate. When it comes to expanding understanding of the STEM and STEAM fields, one of the biggest names right now, and one who will be a featured focus presenter this week at the TCEA Convention and Exposition presented with IdeaCon, is Kate Bieberdorf, better known as Kate the Chemist. And the great way about capturing people's attention and imagination when it comes to chemistry, well, it's that you can blow things up. And that's precisely what Kate is doing. Not only is she blowing up stereotypes around women in science, she's also breaking down barriers that might keep people from enjoying scientific knowledge. The fact that science is stuffy and academic, and it's a lot of, you know, rote memorization, a lot of abstract ideas about tiny particles you can't see and stuff like that. Well, Kate's pushing back against that, and she's been getting a lot of attention going on national talk shows like The Late Show with Stephen Colbert and others to show people the real-world consequences of science. We see it around us all the time. We see it in the news. But building a lifelong appreciation for these things takes those science communicators, and one of them is Dr. Kate. So, to go along with her featured focus presentation at our convention this year, we recorded this conversation about her work, about how she's blowing up stereotypes while also blowing stuff up, and how she's been able to build that career, and what she hopes people take away from her work, and the work of other women in science, technology, engineering, math, and the arts that help convey all of those subjects. That's the topic of this meeting of the EdTech Club, and it all starts right now. Hey everyone, welcome back to another meeting of the EdTech Club, the podcast from TCEA. I'm Andrew Rausch. And as I said, this week, in honor of our TCEA Convention and Exposition 2021, we're sitting down with one of our featured focus presenters, Dr. Kate Bieberdorf. And we're going to turn you from a skeptic to a Belieberdorf. Okay, sorry, I had to include that one. But really, it's going to be a great conversation. So let's introduce Dr. B.
My name is Dr. Kate Bieberdorf, but you may know me as Kate the Chemist. I am a chemistry professor, a science entertainer, and the author of The Big Book of Experiments and a bunch of other fun science books as well.
Yeah, so that's kind of a little bit about what you do. Now, this question was not in our pre-interview, but I feel a little obliged to ask, what is Stephen Colbert like in real life?
Exactly what you see on TV, mm-hmm. I will say. So when you go on these talk shows, you don't meet them ahead of time. They want your initial reaction to be right there. And like you're seeing them again for the first time in a long time. So you have an organic conversation. So I was so nervous to meet him. And then he popped out like 30 seconds ahead of time. I think because he could just tell I was just shaking and I was about to blow something up and he didn't want me to kill him. But he was so kind, so wonderful. And I was supposed to be back on his show last April, but then the pandemic hit in. And so I missed my chance to go back. But fingers crossed that I'll be back again, hopefully this year once everybody gets vaccinated.
Well, very cool. Very cool. And so part of that kind of speaks to how you are not only a chemist and a professor, mm-hmm. But a science communicator, right? So you're teaching within what we might call the academy, within a university, you know, but you're also spreading knowledge outside of what is sometimes kind of a cloistered world of academia, right? You're getting that out into the public. How did you get there? How did you go through this process of becoming a chemist and then becoming a chemist who wants to spread the gospel of molecular bonds or what have you to the world?
Oh, no one's ever phrased it like that before. I love that. Oh, that's so funny. So for me, I've just had a couple pivotal moments in my life. So I had an incredible high school teacher, Mrs. Palsrock. It's my sophomore year of high school. She was energetic. She was engaging and happy. And honestly, ever since I was 15, I just fell in love with chemistry because of this woman. And I never looked back, which is kind of rare because most students, it's something like 80% of students change their majors. But I knew from high school that I wanted to be a chemistry major. And I was lucky enough to go to University of Michigan, where I had wonderful professors, and I continued on my path and then got the PhD in inorganic chemistry. Again, love chemistry. It was just like never hit a barrier that made me stop. I've hit several barriers, don't get me wrong. But never one that made me be like, chemistry's not the thing. Like, I loved it. I love the math behind it. I love thinking about how the molecules come together and how they interact. And I love the number side. And so kinetics is where I spent a lot of my PhD. So how fast does this reaction work? What is this catalyst, good or bad? Does it speed up the reaction? But after I graduated, that's when I started teaching. And so now I teach at the University of Texas. I teach general chemistry, and I have anywhere between like 500 and 900 students a semester. Last semester, I had over 900 students.
Yeah, I remember those classes my freshman year at UT.
But virtual, like through a webcam, man, it was so different and so difficult. But I love it. I love teaching that age group. They're learning laundry and stoichiometry at the same time, and I'm right there for that path. Like, I can help them. So I love that group of students. But I think because of that, like in my seeking to make them fall in love with chemistry and see how cool this field was, I started bringing experiments into the classroom. And I'm not the first person to do this, but I probably am the first person to do it in heels and a lab coat. And so I like love breathing fire, and I love playing with electrochemistry and, you know, playing with liquid nitrogen and dry ice. And I just love that. And so when I had the opportunity to go on local television for We Are Austin here, our variety show essentially that comes on after local news. So when I had a chance to go there, I jumped at it. I started doing experiments there. They were so nice to me. They let me come back for 4 years and practice my science communication skills. And by the end of that, and when I got the call from Hollywood and they're like, hey, do you want to try to be the next Bill Nye? I was like, oh, yes, I do. Like, and I just dove right into it. And I give it my all. Like, I tried as hard as I could to make science interesting. And I think that's kind of come out throughout my different adventures on TV. And I've just been really fortunate that luckily the audiences kind of like it. They like hearing a different perspective of chemistry and someone talking about it with passion instead of making it boring and be like, well, A plus B equals C. And I just hate that when people talk about chemistry. So that was kind of, you know, a long answer for you, but I've had two big moments. I had an opportunity to do something on TV and I had an opportunity to be in a wonderful classroom with a high school teacher. Like, it was this one human that changed my life.
Yeah. And not everyone has that teacher mm-hmm. in their town or at their school. And so having the ability to have a science communicator out in the world, showing you these things might, if you'll excuse the term, spark somebody's interest right. early, right? You, like you said, you came in to college, which is a big enough transition, like you say, trying to understand the nature of nature and society while also mm-hmm. trying to understand the nature of, you know, detergent.
Right.
and so, you know, I think it makes perfect sense, but you talked about kind of getting through like barriers that were mm-hmm. on your way, even though you knew where you wanted to head. And at our convention, you'll be talking about these kinds of barriers. Your session is called Blowing Up Stereotypes, How to Engage Girls in STEM. And so I know you talk a lot about kind of the stereotypes associated with science, capital S, science, mm-hmm, whatever mm-hmm. people think that means. But there are a few stereotypes there, right? There's a sense that science and the STEM fields are male-dominated, which... Okay. I come from a social science background, and I would say that seems to be the case.
Yes.
we also know that there are just generally stereotypes around science and the science community, and that it's mm-hmm. stuffy, and that it's A plus B equals C.
Right.
So kind of talk to us about what these stereotypes are and how you approach ending, myth-busting, those kind right. of things.
Well, I think you said it so well there. There's two main pieces. There's the fact that people maybe aren't interested in science. They could be intimidated by it, or they think it's boring, which, so they're totally turned off. They don't even want to read about it, listen to it. You know, they change the channel. And then there's the other group where you're a woman in STEM and you might not be appreciated as much as you think you should be. And so there's two words I hear all the time from my colleagues, and I have it written down here because they drive me. That's kind of motivation. But it's invisible and underestimated. Like I hear those words a lot. They feel invisible, they feel underestimated, or they're treated in such a way. And so for me, I always was the kid who, if you told me no, I was like, well, now I'm gonna. And so this is a piece where if you're saying, okay, my colleagues, my girlfriends, my girls, like my people, my support system, they feel invisible, they feel underestimated, what can I do to fix that? And so my approach has been trying to figure out how I can kind of come over these stereotypes, or, you know, use the pun, blow them up, and change that and show, shine light on my colleagues and show how my good friend, Livia Everlin, is going out there and she invented a mass spec pen, which is a pen that has a mass spec on the end of it. And I don't expect you to know what that is, but essentially what happens is when these doctors go into the operating rooms, they can use this pen and they tap it on cells. And within 10 seconds, they can find out if the cells are cancerous or benign. And so she's literally changing the world of modern medicine. She's my age and nobody knows who she is. Like nobody's heard of her, except for if you watch Grey's Anatomy, because they did feature the pen. So you might know about the pen if you watch the show, but you don't know about the woman behind it, right? So I'm trying to be out here championing their research and talking about my friends. I try to do what Taylor Swift does, and I know that's a weird thing to say, but Taylor Swift usually talks about her girlfriend's music. She promotes them. She supports her girlfriend. She promotes their music and she talks about their projects and when she's out in interviews. And so she just talks about their work. And so I want to kind of use that same approach and do the same thing with science. And so instead of having a squad like Taylor has, I affectionately refer to it as my STEM army. And so I'm going around trying to build a STEM army. And so girls like Livia Everlin or other professors like Emily Kay are in my STEM army. And so I talk about their research as much as I possibly can. I talk about their names. I want to give them value. And so I just try to promote them. But that's at like the collegiate level. I also have so many different tiers of this. And so one of the ways that I try to break the stereotypes is by reaching out to younger kids. And so part of that has been with partnering with Penguin. And I have a 7-book series now, the Kate the Chemist series. Two of them are nonfiction books. So the first one's already out. It's a big book of experiments, 25 experiments that kids can do at home with stuff that's already in their craft drawer or in their pantry. And then the next one's coming out so soon in May. I'm so excited. And that's 25 edible experiments. So they can do the experiments and then eat them. Which, like, I mean, right? I've been waiting to write this book for 35 years. Like, I am so ready for it. But I'm trying to use these books to reach out to kids and get them engaged before they hit puberty, before they hear somebody say something negative about science. So that they have the confidence, they have the passion, and then if they hear like a little negative, they have the strength to just kind of plow through it and continue to follow their dreams and be a scientist or a doctor or whatever it is they want to do. But maybe science is involved with that.
Yeah, and we all know that science and our understanding of it is vital to our everyday life. I think we kind of know that intellectually, but there are social constructs and social ideas that might keep people from engaging in something they probably think maybe they can't get their heads around, or they don't know enough about, mm-hmm. or is too difficult, or the information is too specific, hard to access, this and that. And so part of it must be kind of making those connections. I mean, we talk a lot about STEM, and we talk a lot about it in conjunction with the arts and right. communication to make it STEAM. Like, you know, food is perhaps the easiest way to see chemistry happening. I don't know anything about chemistry, but I do know that when I put a steak on a really hot pan, something called the Maillard reaction happens.
Yes, you know it. Oh, I'm so proud of you.
There's something there, right? Like, you could hook me with that. Yeah. I think of people like Alton Brown, who did that show Good Eats back in the day.
Such a good show.
I felt like, you know, you watch an episode of that and all of a sudden you actually understand why the recipe tells you to do this or that. And it right. can really liberate you in terms of what you're willing to try. I mean, I must imagine for you being able to get one little hook, show one experiment or one mm-hmm. idea, and that might be able to hook onto something that somebody else is already passionate about. Right.
Exactly. So I grew up with psychologists for parents. So it was always about your thought process. And one thing that I heard all the time was William James's theory of emotional memory. And so it's the theory where if you have an emotional response to something, you're likely to form a memory. So think about, like, if you're driving to work, if nothing happens, you're not likely to remember that particular commute. But if you're driving to work and somehow you drive into a house on accident, like, you're going to remember that trip, right? So you had an emotional response. So it's just one of these theories that I believe. And so I kind of use that in the classroom, where if I can try to evoke an emotional response from my students, then I have about 60 seconds to shove the actual chemistry knowledge into their brain in that time where their brain is making that memory. It's kind of a trick of the trade, right? And so you don't have long, honestly. You only have like 60 seconds for that emotional memory to last. And so you need to be articulate and you need to be ready to go. And like you said, with the science communication skills, like, that's what I've been trying to fine tune over my career. And I have a long way to go, obviously, but it's something that I've been having a lot of fun with, because if it's like, okay, well, I need to practice my science communication, I guess I have to light you on fire. Let's do that. So, you know, and it keeps the classroom fun and exciting. I mean, 75 minutes for any student, any human, it's a long time to learn about chemistry. So if you can break that up with one or two demonstrations, it goes a long way for the student in their learning process.
I think a lot of folks can think back to their schooling experience, and maybe this is just my, you know, humanities kid coming out, but I, you know, you can think a lot about math and science courses where you felt like you were being told something, but you weren't quite sure why.
Right.
I think that's part of it as well, right? It's sort of, those demonstrations can take this back out from the abstract, from calculus and algebra and things that aren't really things into things that are the tangible realities of our everyday life, right?
Absolutely. It's the micro to macro world transition. It's taking the little bit, the fundamental pieces that we can't see, but the theory we have to understand in order to apply it in the macro world, in the lab, and actually predict what's going to happen when you put these two molecules together. So you're completely accurate with that, 100%.
And
see, it's the same. It's all the same. Humanity, science, it's all the same. We have the same conclusions every time. We just think about things differently.
Hey, you can't,
awesome.
Can't get away from society. Can't get away from nature. It's
no.
It's always there.
Yeah.
And maybe this leads a little bit into the next thing I want to cover, which is, you know, if I'm a K-12 educator, regardless of what I teach or how I teach it, really, if I want to be able to tell my story or help break stereotypes or create the kind of communicative relationship with knowledge rather than just a transactional relationship of just providing you the knowledge mm-hmm. and checking that you got it,
To make it more of that conversation that engages people, what does a classroom teacher do? What can they take from your experience?
Well, so for me, I always start with what I need to teach my students, right? You always have a list, your learning objectives, your learning outcomes, however you want to approach your classroom. But you always have the basics. So you have to start there. You build your lectures out there and make sure you get the knowledge in, right? We have the bare minimum we have to hit. Every teacher knows that. The extra piece is where you can make it fun. So I personally, at least in the beginning, my strategy is I would look at my lectures and think, okay, if I had to listen to somebody give me this lecture, where would I get bored? Where would I start to have my attention drop off? And that's where I try to sneak those demonstrations in. Or if maybe that's that, you know, it's too much, like I'm viewing a lecture on nuclear chemistry and I can't just like show one of those explosions because that would kill us all. Maybe I add a real world application. So I add a slide of like, hey, just so you know, this thing we just talked about, it's not just 1.5 volts. It actually means blah, 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 and this battery, and you can do X, Y, and Z. So there's ways you can bring these things in. But I think that if you just focus on the fundamental piece, you lose the students, you lose their interest. And so you have to find a way to get them engaged. And I need to be especially aware of that because a large percentage of my students are not going to be chemistry majors. It's something like 3% of my students are actually chem majors. So the rest of them are going to go on and do bigger and better things with different majors. And so I just want to get them to have an appreciation of the science. I want them to be able to understand what a good source is so that when they go out and they're trying to be a good citizen and, you know, whatever that involves and voting and everything, they're looking and they're using their science skills and their critical thinking skills. And it applies to just everything in life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I could see how when you go up against that question of, hey, Dr. Kate, when am I ever going to use this? Well, I mean, even if you personally never use this particular piece of knowledge, you're a part of the society that uses this knowledge and this science, mm-hmm. and you maybe have a responsibility on some level to try to engage with it, to try to understand it, because it affects our world whether or not you care.
Right. And I do try to give them an appreciation of science so much that they were willing to become advocates for science. Like, that's the true goal. But I don't say that out loud because I think if I ask them to be an advocate for science and they're like, oh, no, wait, hold on. But if I give them a passion about the science and I give them the skills and the information for it, then they can put it together. I mean, our students right now, these 18-year-olds, they are good at social media. They know how to put facts out there. They also know how to put fiction out there. So if we can try to help them be better humans on social media, I think that would go a long way right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think a lot of people growing up right now, you know, they live in an era where they have more access to information, correct or incorrect,
than
they
ever did.
Not even close. Right. And so right. I think it builds a natural kind of savvy there in terms of they kind of will naturally start to be discerning in their sourcing of things, but it also gives them the opportunity to do the opposite, right? Mm-hmm. So being able to catch them and make them care about science, not for science's sake, but really for their own, right?
Or right.
for something they care about.
Yeah, one of my favorite exercises to do is to give them an article and then show them how, I think it's Fox News reported it, and then how the Huffington Post reported it. And so you just showing them the two different sources, and it's like, look, they both kind of missed a piece of the information. They both said a big part of it, but it wasn't the whole story. And so it's just encouraging them, like, if you are a person who listens to one or the other, make sure you're kind of cross-referencing. You're taking a second and looking at the other side and making sure you're getting everything. But I also have a fun one that I use from The Onion. And it's talking about a satellite going around the Earth and its extension cord keeps getting tangled. And so just articles like that where I put it out there. Things like, I want you to be able to immediately know that you're reading something that isn't accurate. This isn't scientifically accurate. So I'm just trying to teach them little pieces, little things so that they're good right. humans. Especially if they're living here in Austin, they're going to be my neighbors eventually. I want them to have good skills.
And they're going to be voting alongside you and all that good stuff. Makes perfect sense. I don't want to take up too much more of your time here, but I'm thinking, I'm doing my research about who's going to be at TCA. I see Kate the chemist. I say, well, that's pretty exciting. Those are cool demos. Looks fun. But I'm just me. I'm Mr. Rausch, and mm-hmm. I'm a history teacher, and I still want that. Like, how do I find my hook, my passion into a topic perhaps that maybe isn't my favorite part, right? You must have a unit in your freshman chemistry course where you're like, this is just the lamest one. I don't like teaching it very much.
Yes, I do.
But I have to make myself, because I know why it's important. So I have to make myself care, right?
Honestly, okay. So that's so funny that you just said that, because the unit that I just taught, so we have to pre-film lectures. So I spent 3 hours this morning shooting lectures for the unit that I don't like very much. So that's so funny to me that you just said that. All right. So what I do is I force myself to spend more time with it. That's what I do, is because there's a reason I don't like it. And for my, in my opinion, it means I don't have an appreciation of it yet. I don't understand it enough. So I'm missing the cool part of it, because if it's in that Gen Chem textbook or if it's in our curriculum, there's a reason why. And so I actually reached out to my colleagues 2 years ago for this particular unit. And I was like, I hate this unit. I don't like it. I don't like teaching it. And one of my colleagues was so shocked because it was his favorite one. And I was shocked that it was his favorite one. And it stemmed into this awesome conversation where we ended up talking about all this weird stuff and like geckos and how they use their hair on their feet to cling from the ceilings. Like, we got all off topic, but it was such a wonderful conversation. So I would honestly encourage you, if you are a teacher, ask your friends, ask your colleagues and say like, I hate this unit. How can I teach this unit and make it more fun? Because your colleagues probably have wonderful examples already. And like, we want to be better teachers, right? So we steal from each other all the time. So, you know, share your curriculum, be a good teacher, be a good human.
Excellent. Okay. So, I'm excited. I'm going to watch your session at TCEA. So what now? If you got plugs, where do people go to find out more about you? They want to get the skinny. Where are we learning about Dr. Kate?
So my stage name is Kate the Chemist. So everything online is under Kate the Chemist, because if people tried to spell Bieberdorf, they would get probably lost. So Kate the Chemist.
I would have put some extra vowels in there if I had been guessing. Oh, yeah.
I actually just got a really nice mug that somebody had specially engraved and it was spelled wrong. And it was like, oh goodness, there's a couple extra letters there. But I love it. I love it. If you're hearing it, I love it. I will absolutely use it because it's a nice mug. So katethechemist.com is where you can find that. Instagram is where most of my social media is at. I love to post pictures or to explain different science principles or things that are going on in the media. So Kate the Chemist, pretty much everywhere except for Twitter. I'm Kay. And then the number 8, the Chemist.
That was from earlier in life when we were still spelling things with numbers, I see.
Well, it was from somebody, there's already a Kate the Chemist on Twitter. And so I just don't want to kick her off or be rude. So I will just say Kate the Chemist with the number 8. And I'm totally happy with it.
You can't change the brand. You couldn't be Catherine the Chemist. That just
Yeah, and that's my formal name. So I'm only Catherine when my mom is mad at me. And so Catherine the Chemist is not happening.
Yeah, that's for mom and that's for the degrees on the wall.
Yeah, exactly.
Understood.
You get it.
Well, Kate the Chemist, thank you for chatting with us, and we're really excited to see you at TCEA.
Thank you so much. I cannot wait to do it. We're going to have some fire, some liquid nitrogen. We're going to share some strategies, and we're going to get more people into STEM. I cannot wait.
We're going to blow up some stereotypes and also, like, just some stuff.
Maybe a ceiling?
Yeah, exactly.
A webcam?
You'll be on campus for that part, right? We don't have to worry
about it. Of course.
Okay, great. Just insurance check, you know?
Yeah. Don't do it at home. That's what my lawyer always says.
Yeah, you should get a pin that says, don't try this at home. Just be able to wear it all the time.
Or just put one in back behind me in the background so I don't have to say it. I can just be like, look, it said it right there.
That could be your new Zoom background, right?
Yes, I could. That's a good one. I like that.
Well, thanks so much, Kate. I appreciate you having the meeting with us and taking out the time to chat with us on the podcast.
It's such a pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, our thanks again to Dr. Kate Bieberdorf, Kate the Chemist. Learn more about her with the links in the description to this episode. And if you're listening to this before 4 p.m. Central Time on February 4th, 2021, there's still time for you to go see it live. Listening to it later? Well, good news, if it's before March 5th, 2021, you can still register and access all the recorded live sessions and on-demand learning at this year's virtual TCEA convention and exposition presented with IdeaCon. Plus, there's all kinds of engagement opportunities after our week of live events, and there's more events from IdeaCon February 22nd through 24th. There's a lot going on, so the best way to keep up with it? Get registered at convention.tcea.org. So that's it. Stay tuned. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, though. We're going to have more amazing conversations coming from our 2021 TCA convention in the coming weeks. So I hope you'll join us then. But until that time, I'm Andrew Rausch. Thanks for being part of the club. EdTech Club is a production of TCEA. To learn more and to join, go to tcea.org.